Well, what a drama this referendum campaign has been, ending, of course, with the resignation of the British Prime Minister, David Cameron. As the polls closed, Nigel Farage, I referred to him earlier, the leader of the Eurosceptic UKIP party, had just about conceded defeat. He admitted that the Remain side looked like it was going to eke out a victory. And then the results started to come in and everyone had to rewrite their headlines. Well, as the US was waking up last night, our time, we wanted to get the thoughts of three British commentators on what this means for the UK. And our guests were Matthew Paris, columnist with The Times and a former Tory MP, Gabby Hinscliffe, columnist with The Guardian and political editor at The Pool, and Martin Fletcher, a former foreign correspondent with The Times and now a writer at large. And I welcome them all to Saturday Extra.
Morning.
If that's what you call it.
Nothing good about it.
Can I ask, though, why was this a surprise? If the polls had predicted that Remain would prevail by, say, 51-49 or 52-48, why is it a surprise that they've lost 52-49?
It was a surprise because nobody could really believe that the British people could be so stupid. So even though the polls were suggesting it was neck and neck or that Leave might win, none of us in our hearts could believe that such a crazy thing was going to happen, and it's happened.
Yeah,
I'm going to be kind to the British people there and say it's something to do with the fact that you can think something might happen. I mean, I live in a part of the country, rural part of the country, that is quite Eurosceptic. You can think something's going to happen, but there's nothing like the shock of actually seeing it happen. Mm. You can see something coming, and you still, you know, feel the force of being knocked off your feet when it happens.
Yes. Martin, a surprise for you or not?
Well, I think one reason it's a surprise is most of the media and the commentariat live in London, which was 60-40 in favour of remaining, and simply didn't understand the strength of feeling or the extent to which people were being hoodwinked by the Leave campaign in the rest of the country.
Mm. Now, Matthew, I mean, you're very tough there on your fellow citizens of the UK, but I mean, this is a global trend. People have noticed that globalisation, and in this case, the European Union, has not necessarily universally and uniformly improved their lives. You don't think you're being a bit tough there on the majority of your countrymen?
The British economy has been steadily growing. It's always easy to play on people's fears and insecurities if you have politicians unscrupulous enough to do it. And we have, in this case, I'm afraid, supplied those politicians. I think the Leave campaign was deceitful in many ways, and I think too many people believed them. I live in the country, and I know very well how people believed what the Leave campaigners said. I mean, sheep farmers here actually think that the British government is going to be kinder to them than the European Union was. They're simply wrong. People have been misled. I need no further explanation for the result.
Gabby Hinscliffe, Matthew says there that the Leave campaign was very deceitful, but didn't the Remainers over-egg the pudding? I mean, we had David Cameron suggesting that leaving the EU would lead to World War III.
I think it got mildly hysterical on both sides, but I would say it was the Leave campaign that started ratcheting things up first, and then Remain became sort of more and more desperate to come up with an equally strong argument on the other hand. And I think many voters just got to a point where they couldn't believe either of them, where they heard both sides saying the other side was lying, which feeds into an existing belief among many voters that all politicians are liars anyway. And I think in the end, people just ended up discarding the facts and going with a gut feeling.
Mm. Martin?
It was based on a cartoon caricature of Europe that was invented by Boris Johnson when he was Telegraph correspondent of the Daily Telegraph in the early 1990s, and it has persisted ever since. This idea that Europe is a bunch of meddling, scheming Europeans out to do Britain down, that Britain is somehow alone in fighting a gallant rearguard battle against, you know, lots of 27 other nation states, when in fact we have plenty of allies there, if only we would work with them and form alliances and try and reform the EU from within.
Yeah.
And they accuse the Remain campaign of Project Fear, but we are now seeing all the warnings that the Remain campaign delivered coming true. Already we're seeing the pound plunging, the stock market plunging, the Prime Minister resigning. There's a very real possibility of recession. We've chosen to exclude ourselves from that single market. Boris Johnson could become Prime Minister. Farage is now a power in the land. Scotland is demanding independence. And we further destabilised a very unstable world.
Gabby Hinsliff, let me ask you, though. I mean, you were surveying the international trends at The Guardian. Did it really help the Remain cause to have sort of finger-wagging lectures from people like Barack Obama, even Australia's own Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull, a range of European leaders, some of them unelected, telling the British people the consequences of their vote? I'm wondering if this backfired, Gabby.
There was a feeling that perhaps Obama's intervention was counterproductive, that many people thought, you know, who are you to come over here telling us what to do? But I think it would be unfair, to be honest, to blame this defeat on intervention from outside. I think it's part of a bigger problem, which is that this whole referendum was about, you're not the boss of me. You know, I don't want the elite telling me what to do, even though, of course, the people who were leading, if you look at who was leading the Leave campaign, Boris Johnson, former public school boy, friend of Princess Diana's brother, you know, these are not people who are exactly kind of clawed themselves up by their kind of fingernails. But the mood was very much, I don't want to be told what to do by posh people, by people who've been in charge for too long. It was about, this is the will of the masses. That's what we kept hearing. So whenever anybody with any authority to speak whatsoever, whether it was the governor of the Bank of England, whether it was economists, whether it was, you know, foreign politicians, there was an immediate backlash against them. It was almost that by having any claim to know what you were talking about, you were immediately discounted. You couldn't be listened to. The only people who could be listened to were ordinary people.
Matthew Paris, you're a former Tory MP. What is the fate of your old party now?
I really struggle to work out what its fate could be. I think we're probably going to have a general election within the next year or so. Obviously, an entirely new leadership for the Conservative Party. A lot more than half, nearly two-thirds of Conservative MPs believe that we should stay in the European Union. Under what sort of banner are they going to fight at the next general election? I struggle to see how the Conservative Party can stay together.
Yeah, two-thirds of MPs, but isn't it true that probably a majority of the membership of the Conservative Party in all those Conservative associations across the UK, they favoured Brexit?
Yes, they always have. The Conservative Party has always been the party in the country, a long way to the right of the party in the House of Commons, and it has always been Eurosceptic, and it has been the duty of the parliamentary party not to take too much notice of the national membership.
Martin Fletcher, formerly of The Times, now writer at large. Martin, what does this say about the divisions within the UK itself? Because you've got Scotland, the City of London, and I think parts of Northern Ireland loyal to the Remain cause, but the rest of Britain looks awash with Brexiters.
It's profoundly divided. I mean, the great irony of this is Cameron called this referendum in order to try and end the divisions within the Tory party and fend off UKIP. And he's done exactly the opposite. He's deepened the divisions not only within the Tory party, but right across the country. So you have London is a little island now in the country at large. Scotland is firmly for Remain. Nicola Sturgeon is already talking about another referendum on Scottish independence. And over in Northern Ireland, you've had Sinn Féin today talking about a new drive towards a united Ireland. Cameron has ended up splitting the Tory party, splitting the United Kingdom, and splitting Europe.
Yes. Matthew, this was an interesting projection after the last UK election when David Cameron won that very narrow majority, I think 12 seats or something. People were suspecting this could be his downfall because he was now committed to the referendum. He didn't have, if you like, the restraining hand, in inverted commas, of the Liberal Democrats. Was this referendum lost at the general election a year ago?
Well, some people say that he only promised the referendum because he didn't seriously expect to be leading a Conservative majority government. He expected that at best he'd be leading another coalition government and that the Liberal Democrat part of the coalition would veto the idea of having the referendum. So he made the promise in order to add to Conservative votes and in order to try to unite his party without thinking he'd have to bring it into effect. I don't know if he was as cynical as that. But I don't think it's right to say that the referendum was lost at the time of the last election. Mm. When he made the promise, there was a very good majority for staying in the European Union within Britain, and that maintained for quite some time. It's actually only just around the campaign itself that the whole case seems to have dipped, to have collapsed.
Yeah. Martin, seeing as you sort of gave the biggest spray against the result, is it not true, though? I do feel duty-bound, given that you're all Remainers, to just slightly be devil's advocate here. Is it not true, though, that Britons never really got a chance to vote on being part of the European Union as it is currently conceived?
Yeah, look, I'm not defending the European Union in this sense. It has been guilty of overweening ambition. It is certainly bureaucratic, meddlesome, and at times incompetent. The only thing I would say is that leaving it is far, far worse than staying. And far from quitting, we should be in there fighting to reform it, to change it. What the people of Britain, voters, were not told by our Eurosceptic press is that very often we have engaged with Europe and won the arguments. We won the argument on European enlargement to embrace the former communist countries of Eastern Europe. We won the argument on competition policy. We won the argument on the single market. You know, if you talk to the French, the European Union is some sort of Anglo-Saxon plot to impose Anglo-Saxon economic policies on Europe. We do win when we engage. But you know, we haven't engaged for so long because we've grown so Eurosceptic. For example, I don't mean just engage with the arguments and build alliances with our natural allies, and we have a lot in Europe, but we don't even send our civil servants to work as Eurocrats there anymore. You know, we're hopelessly underrepresented. Mm. You know, we're not talking about Euroscepticism last month or two. We're talking about 20 or 30 years of Euroscepticism, which has greatly hobbled our ability to mould it in our own image.
Yeah. This is Saturday Extra. Andrew West with you in for Geraldine. And we're talking about the extraordinary events in the UK, the vote to leave the EU, now the resignation of the Prime Minister David Cameron, and the aftermath of both decisions. We've got three very distinguished commentators: Matthew Paris, columnist with The Times, BBC broadcaster and a former Tory MP; Gabby Hinsliff, a columnist with The Guardian and political editor at The Pool; and Martin Fletcher, former foreign correspondent with The Times, who's now writer at large. Gabby, The Guardian keeps a very close eye on happenings within the Labour Party. We're focusing at the moment on David Cameron and the Tories because he's only got, I think, another 3 months to run as Prime Minister. But what now is the consequence for the Labour Party? Because you've got Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn, who was pretty tepid in his endorsement of EU membership. Will that save him, ironically, rather than hurt him?
He's hoping. But I think there's a great deal of anger in the Labour Party this morning, and there's talk this morning about whether we could end up with leadership contests in both parties at the same time. Corbyn, the assumption has always been that he's secretly an outer, really. That's the way he's tended to vote, talk and think before becoming leader, and that he only rather grudgingly led Labour into the In campaign because that's where the bulk of his party was, even if it wasn't where he was. He's not, it's fair to say he hasn't led from the front, he hasn't even led from the back, really. He's been almost invisible through the campaign, and his support has been somewhat grudging. And he put out a statement this morning saying basically that he's shown he's more in touch with the people than the other leaders of the In campaign, which has got many Labour MPs absolutely furious because they think either, look, if you're out, have the courage to say you're out. If you're in, own your decision. You know, take responsibility for the fact that you were in. And that millions of Labour voters, you know, it was Labour voters in the north of the country, particularly working class Labour voters, traditional Labour voters, who voted out in huge numbers.
Yeah.
They were trying to tell the Labour Party something that they've been trying to tell the Labour Party for years, often about immigration, partly about economic insecurity, to sort of pretend that this isn't a sort of a moment of existential crisis for the Labour Party, as well as the Conservative Party, is frankly dishonest.
Yes, and Gabby, this is the real crisis for Labour in this sense, that while London, which I think the Labour Party won at the general election, an otherwise generally bad result, but I think with 43-44%, they stuck with the European Union in large numbers, but that lost heartland of Labour, that you talked about. I mean, I think Sunderland, 61% for out. So how does any Labour leader, let alone Jeremy Corbyn, handle that?
It's really difficult. There is now a huge split in the middle of the Labour Party between that traditional working class vote that has quite socially conservative views and between the part of the Labour Party that brought Corbyn to power. I mean, Corbyn is the most pro-immigration Labour leader that we've had for some time. He's absolutely steeped in sort of, he's a very kind of liberal metropolitan city bloke who does not particularly feel in touch with that side of the party. And Labour has been a sort of uneasy coalition between two sorts of people, you know, quite young city-dwelling liberals and often older people living in sort of provincial towns who felt left behind. And Labour's kind of managed to straddle both those horses for a while. Mm. But you feel as if now is the moment when they really are pulling in separate directions. And I think there will be a huge debate, whether or not there is a leadership contest, there will be a huge debate within the Labour Party about, you know, which way it jumps.
Yeah.
Does it split in the same way that the Tory Party has? Do we end up with a huge realignment of British politics?
Yes. Matthew, I just want to come back to you as we wind up. Is it not telling, though, that when I looked at the images as the results rolled in, there were people crying into their gin glasses and champagne glasses in fashionable metropolitan London and Oxford, and the people who were cheering were the people in pubs? I mean, these images are very telling, aren't they?
Yes, they're very telling indeed. And in
you can't write off that genuine blue collar grievance, a legitimate grievance, surely.
I'm not writing it off, but in 2 or 3 years' time, who will be suffering from this decision? It won't be the people drinking the gins and tonics and champagnes. It will be the same people who have been duped into voting against their own interests, whose economic interests will be suffering, whose jobs may be threatened, whose salaries will then be stunted. It is always the poorer part of a population who suffer from bad political decisions. And this country has just made a very bad political decision. And it won't be people like me who'll suffer from it. It will be the people whom you're talking about, the working class, blue-collar Labour voters.
Yeah, Martin Fletcher, just finally to you, immigration, of course. Was that the decisive issue here?
I think it was the most decisive of several issues, yes, undoubtedly. And I'm afraid to say that the campaign had a more than a tinge of racism and xenophobia about it. The irony is it's not going to stop immigration. Most immigrants come to this country not from within the EU. They come from outside. And as I said earlier, you know, we aren't going, if we want access to the single market, we're going to have to continue accepting EU citizens in this country. That's going to be an immutable condition of our continued access.
I'm loath, though, to accept that it was entirely a racist or xenophobic response. I mean, surely, arguments were...
There's certainly a flavour of that. Mm.
Yes, but weren't there arguments being made about the pressures on general practitioners and in schools? And
Okay, firstly, the immigration is not a bad thing. It's benefited this country. It's benefited the US. It's benefited your country over many decades.
Undoubtedly.
It's the scale of immigration that has been the problem. Secondly, immigrants keep our National Health Service going. It would collapse without immigrant workers. So would education. So would many other social services. But all you ever heard from the Leave campaign was how immigrants were stretching these services to breaking point. It was, as I said at the beginning, it was a thoroughly mendacious campaign based on falsehoods and lies. It exploited, if I may say it, the legitimate fears of a lot of Britons.
Well, everyone's got to live with it now. I thank you all very much. We've been speaking with Martin Fletcher, former foreign correspondent with the Times of London, now a writer at large, with Gabby Hinsliff, columnist with The Guardian and political editor at The Pool, and Matthew Paris, columnist with The Times and a former Tory MP. Thank you all very much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Not happy John, by the sounds of it. We're going to stay with the monumental Brexit decision, but we're going to take a look at it from a European point of view.